The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
Here we go!
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go!
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Let's go!
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Can you believe we are less than 1 week away from the NFL draft? That's right. Next week at this time, we'll be breaking down the first round, or maybe already have broken down the first round, and talking about actual players in the NFL as opposed to previewing the NFL draft like we're going to do here with the wide receivers. Welcome to Fantasy Football Today. I'm Jamie Eisenberg with Dave Richard, Heath Cummings, and Ben Gretsch. Adam Azer is still on his sabbatical. We don't know when he's going to return. And probably some of us don't care. In any event, let's talk about the rookie wide receivers coming into the NFL. It's going to be one of our big topics for today. And I got a question for you guys. If the Eagles move up from number 21 in the first round to draft your favorite wide receiver prospect, who is that player and where would you be drafting them in 2020? Ben, I'll start with you.
For me, it's CeeDee Lamb. And in redraft, I'd probably be drafting him around the fifth or sixth round. There's a lot of good young receiver talent, so I don't know exactly how high I would get him right away in redraft. In Dynasty, I'd be a lot more excited about him.
Dave?
Lamb, I think I'd probably say round six. I'm trying to, like, reconfigure my rankings in my mind to see, yeah, I think I would take him. Assuming that Debo gets company in San Francisco, round six.
Heath?
Yeah, I would, like, Lamb, I think, is the best, so I'll say him. I was looking at my projections, and, like, I've got A.J. Brown at 22nd, Terry McLaurin 23rd, Michael Gallup 24th. I think he'd be right in that range, behind Brown for sure. So, borderline number two wide receiver, it's possible he'd be in the top 24.
I just wonder, though, if it's not Philadelphia, and we see, or maybe it's not Lamb, and we see Philadelphia take Henry Ruggs, because you're getting a lot of buzz about Ruggs being maybe the first receiver off the board. Mm-hmm. And it seems as if, fantasy-wise, the consensus is Lamb or Judy, and Ruggs is the third option. And I wonder if Ruggs goes to Philadelphia, which could easily happen. And then we're like, maybe, sure, I'll take him.
I mean, any receiver would have a chance in Philadelphia. I don't think I'd be as excited to take Ruggs in six.
I think it's just a matter of what they do with the rest of the guys there, right? That's the conversation we've been having for a few weeks now. Is Jeffrey back? Is Deshaun healthy?
Yep.
You know, what's Ward's role? What's Arcega-Whiteside's role? If it's Ruggs, Ben, would you be as excited?
I wouldn't. I was going to say, and Jeffrey and Jackson both have so much dead money that they can't cut them, basically. They have to swing a trade somehow. So I'm kind of expecting that they won't be able to do that, that no one will take on those deals, and that those guys will be back. Which means, for me, if it's someone like Ruggs, he probably winds up behind Jackson in that field stretcher role and playing when Jackson's hurt. And I don't know that he's necessarily a consistent producer, because you probably do still have Jeffrey on the field in both tight ends. But whereas if it's someone like Lamb, who I think could be a higher target player, there's more potential for him to really put up good numbers.
Right, and then we see Lamb or Judy maybe with the Raiders, maybe with the Jets, maybe with the 49ers, as Dave alluded to, with Debo Samuel. Heath, if that's the case, would you be more excited about those guys as opposed to Ruggs in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that we talked about it on a podcast last week. One of the problems with Judy and Lamb for redraft specifically is we've seen them a lot of times mocked to teams that are not the Eagles that either don't have as much opportunity or we wouldn't be as excited because of the quarterback or the offensive situation. And on the Jets, on the Raiders, on the 49ers, those guys aren't getting anywhere close to my top 25 wide receivers.
Yeah, I'm so curious to see, as much as those teams that need really, in some cases, a number one wide receiver, what the teams at the back end of the first round, or maybe what a team does in the second or third round to sort of get that second guy, like Green Bay, for example. Minnesota is going to be interesting. Baltimore is going to be interesting.
You know, it's going to be fun to see what some of those teams do at the end of round one, maybe as much so as some of these teams like the Jets, like the Raiders, who don't exactly have great quarterback situations. Getting the number two guy for Aaron Rodgers might be better than the number one guy for the Jets, depending on who that wide receiver may or may not be. All right, so we got a lot of fun stuff coming up. Get ready for the debut of the FFT Twitch channel on Tuesday, April 21st at 7 p.m. Eastern. Myself, Dave, Heath, and Adam will be broadcasting live from our new Twitch channel. We'll have NFL draft preview segments breaking down each position group throughout the entire hour. We'll be answering your chat questions as well. Go to twitch.tv/FFToday or search FF Today on Twitch to follow us ahead of time. We'll also put the Twitch link in the description of this episode. You can also join our Facebook group, search Fantasy Football Today on Facebook, or click the link in the description to chat with the FFT team and other fantasy fans. Plenty of talk about Keepers Dynasty now, and our buddy Adam Azer is giving away a spot in the podcast listener league next week. So you want to check out our Facebook group now. We also have pre-draft and NFL draft coverage coming up next week, all week on CBS Sports HQ. Tuesday and Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern and Thursday and Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Tuesday, we're going to break down the running backs. We're going to talk to Boston College running back A.J. Dillon. Wednesday, we're going to look at the wide receivers. Thursday, we're going to look at the quarterbacks and preview round one. And then on Friday, we're going to react to the first round and also look ahead to the rest of the week. So check out CBS Sports HQ. All the best sports coverage you could find on CBS Sports HQ. All right, so we're talking about the rookie wide receivers here. I think we're going to break down the startup dynasty mock draft that we did yesterday. That'll be up to Adam which mock draft we review for Mock Draft Monday. But I took a look at the wide receivers in that draft, and they basically went what you can probably consider as the top 10 rookies coming into the NFL draft. I thought that's kind of the order that they went. You had CeeDee Lamb in round 5, Jerry Jeudy in round 6, Henry Ruggs in round 8, Justin Jefferson in round 9, Jalen Reagor round 9 as well, Denzel Mims round 10, T. Higgins round 11, Chenault in round 11 as well. Ben took him. He's the only one of the top 10 rookie wide receivers that was drafted to any of us. I take that back. He was the first one. I took Brandon Ayuk in round 12, and then Michael Pittman Jr. went in round 13. So those are, correct me if I'm wrong, is there anybody outside of that group you think that is going to be looked at right now as the top 10 wide receivers?
Nope.
No, I don't think. Brian Edwards is one guy that possibly could.
Edwards is one. KJ Hamler, if he lands in the right spot, would be another.
No, I'm talking right now. Obviously, it'll change when we get past the draft.
I think that's a good top 10.
Right. Yeah, maybe Claypool, maybe Brian Edwards, Tyler Johnson's another one. You know, there's a few guys that I think, you know, depending on what rank list you look at now, but I think those are the top 10. Forget about the order. Those seem to be the top 10. So when you're looking at this group, Dave, I'll start with you. Who has the most long-term upside of these rookie wide receivers? Is it just Lamb and we move on, or is there anybody else?
I think Jeudy has long-term upside as well. I think that both of those guys can be anywhere from top 24 to top 10 fantasy receivers in any given year. I don't think that either one can necessarily be consistent. It really depends where they end up. You know, CeeDee Lamb in Philadelphia playing with Carson Wentz for the next 8 years could be really good for fantasy. And maybe Jerry Jeudy if the Raiders hang on to John Gruden. I do like the idea of Jeudy playing in that style of West Coast offense. I think he'd be really good. I'd rather see Jeudy in Vegas than CeeDee Lamb in Vegas, as an example. I think that he's a better fit for what John Gruden likes to do with his offense. I think those guys are really the only two guys. You can make the case for Jefferson. If he's just going to be a polished slot receiver for his entire career and he gets, you know, the Edelman treatment and a ton of targets every single year, then you can make the case for him as well. But it comes down to a team actually using him that way. To me, it really feels like it's a deep class of receivers, but it's not necessarily top heavy.
I guess the question, Heath, I'll ask you this, because I know we talked about Ruggs a little bit. You're getting a lot of Tyreek Hill comparisons. Do you see that?
I think it's possible. Like we said the same thing was said about Mecole Hardman last year, partially because he went to the Chiefs, but also because like he could do some of those things and had that incredible speed. And it's just a good reminder that guys that need to fix a lot of things but have the blazing speed don't often turn into Tyreek Hill. They turn into other things sometimes. Sometimes they turn into Ted Ginn. Sometimes they flame out. And I think Ruggs could have upside. Like there's one guy Dave didn't mention that I don't think he has the same upside as Lamb probably, but I am – like the more that I look at him, the more that I'm falling in love with him is Denzel Mims. And part of it's because I just got Matt Waldman's draft guide and he likes him quite a bit. Part of it, I mean, you look at the player profiler, his best comp is Chris Godwin. It's a guy who was awesome as a 20-year-old sophomore and has continued to be good. And he's big. He's really, really fast. I would not be that surprised if Denzel Mims was the best rookie this year and the best rookie for the next 5 years.
He could end up in Green Bay, and that's a fun pairing of him and Devontae Adams if, in fact, that does come to fruition. And he could be a guy that the Eagles maybe look at 21, if all the – I think there's a pretty consensus if you talk to people around the NFL, and I've been spending some time, reaching out to, some guys that cover the league, and there's a pretty consensus group that think the first four receivers are locked into the first round, the three that we always talk about in Jefferson. And then it's after that, it's going to depend on what the team needs are, who's looking at it, who has early picks in the second round, who's going to look to maybe trade up into the early part of the second round. But those four guys are locked into the first round, and then it's, can you get two or three other guys in the back end of the first round? And that's where Mims, where Rager, where T. Higgins, some of these guys come in and who you're falling in love with. But I think you're going to see the same thing. Ben, I'll ask you the same one. Who has the most long-term upside? Give me somebody outside of the top three. Who has the most long – or top four long-term upside?
Yeah, my favorite from that next group is probably Laviska Shenault, who did a lot of things at Colorado. Wasn't just a really productive receiver at a young age, but also they started lining him up in the Wildcat a ton. He had – I think something like 7 rushing touchdowns this final season. Really productive guy with the ball in his hands. And when we look at 7 rushing touchdowns over his career, he had 5 in his sophomore year, 2 more in his junior year, and also caught 10 touchdowns. But when we look at things like market share and how productive, what share of his offense he accounted for, Shenault really pops, and he was a guy who broke out at a young age and looks really good in a lot of models. He's kind of the comparable to – there's not really a great one this year, but he's kind of the comparable to the A.J. Brown of last year.
That'd be a fun comp, and shocking that you're the one that would bring that up. I'm very surprised to hear that.
He's also one of those not too tall but definitely big receivers, like kind of built like a thicker running back.
Yeah,
he's over 220 pounds.
Right. 220, right.
He's just over 6 foot, six and a half feet, okay. Laviska Shenault is.
Ben, before we move on, tell us some of the things you look for when you're looking at a wide receiver and how they translate some of their college numbers or college scenarios to NFL production.
Yeah, so there's like 3 main things when I'm looking at the numbers side of it. And I totally get the film side of it. I'm going to be more of a numbers guy. I'm looking for early production. I talk about that a lot with guys like AJ Brown and DJ Moore. And then I'm looking at, to define that production, it's going to be in the context of the team. So there's a lot of different ways you can do that. You can look at receiving yards per team pass attempt. You can look at just what percentage of the receiving yards. We talk about it as we call it market share or share of the yardage. One good example of why you would do that is Justin Jefferson this year. He had 850 yards in his sophomore year. He had 1,500 in his junior year. But because LSU threw for under 3,000 yards in his sophomore year and then threw for over 6,000, they more than doubled their team passing yardage in 1 year. He actually had a higher percentage of the team's offense in his sophomore year. And I think that's, that doesn't mean that he wasn't as good as junior year. He was amazing. He had 111 catches, 1,500 yards, 18 touchdowns. But it does mean, I think it's a good case that sophomore year was a little underrated. He had 850 yards in a poor passing offense, and it showed that if he was in a better situation like he was his junior year, he had that kind of upside. And so that's why I like Shenault, and he's a really good example of that market share metric. His sophomore year at Colorado, they didn't throw for a ton of yards. He had 46% of their yards, almost half of their receiving yardage. With a 1,011 yard season, it wasn't an eye popping season, but for a 20-year-old sophomore to dominate the production for his team in a Power 5 conference, I know the Pac-12 isn't the SEC or anything, but it speaks really well to his long term production. So you want to see that production early. You want to see it as a measure of the team's offense, because some of these offenses can just put up such gaudy numbers in college. And then the third thing you want to look at is a little bit just completely off the wall, but it's, were they an early declare or not? And there's, a lot of hypotheses about why that would be helpful, but the reality is the data shows that guys that declare early before their eligibility is up have a much higher hit rate. And, the way I think about it is it probably is an indication that they're getting good feedback from scouts and they're guys that the NFL is going to like.
There's also probably a year younger.
I was going to say, there's also an age factor to it, is right. that, you know, they may not stand out as their rookie year, but by the time they hit their third year, which is when typically you see the best out of wide receivers to start to blossom in their careers, they're a little bit younger than some of the elder guys. It may give you a little bit of trepidation, potentially, with somebody like Van Jefferson, who's a little bit older. I like him, but, you know, he's on the older side of things for some of the prospects, so could be an interesting comparison there. All right, so I want to read a tweet from somebody who I respect and enjoy talking to a lot. This was about an hour ago. Haven't even settled on top five yet, but pretty sure it includes A.J. Brown, Terry McLaurin, D.K. Metcalf, and C.D. Lamb. And that's from Heath Cummings saying he's trying to rank the wide receivers from the past two classes for dynasty purposes. So last year's rookie class, we had a lot of great wide receivers. It wasn't the two we were expecting at this point. Last year, we were talking about Marquise Brown and N'Keal Harry. They were the first two receivers off the board. And then we saw Terry McLaurin, A.J. Brown, Deebo Samuel, D.K. Metcalf. You know, it was a fun rookie season for some of the guys that were, we thought had a chance, but maybe not to the level of the first round guys. So when you look at Lamb, you look at Judy, you look at Ruggs, you look at Jefferson. Again, I'll run down the top 10 quickly of those guys, that being the top four. Mims, T. Higgins, Jalen Reagor, Chenault, Ayuk, Pittman. You know, there's Brian Edwards, you want to throw him in there as well. Hamler, you know, some of the guys that are at the top. But how do the rookies now compare to the incoming rookies now compare to the 2019 class, Heath? What do you see from these guys in terms of, you know, where they could stack up fantasy-wise?
Yeah, I mean, I think looking at it from the fantasy perspective, I would have to put all of them for now behind the top three from last year's class just because, like what you said about who we thought the top guy was going into last year, or the top two guys going into last year, and where their value would fall right now, it's crushed. And so, at least for Harry, maybe not quite as much for Marquise Brown, but still, I wouldn't put him in the top three, so that's a fall. So I would not put any of this year's class of receivers ahead of A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, or Terry McLaurin. I think you can make a pretty good case for Lamb and maybe Judy as well in the top five. I would put Mims, Jefferson, and Ruggs as borderline top 10 guys or right towards the end of the top 10. I think there are, like, if you're doing a top 20, there are probably more guys from this class than there are from last year's class. But the top five is going to be mostly guys from last year's class.
Dave, if CeeDee Lamb goes to the Jets and the 49ers do not draft a wide receiver, who would you rather have, CeeDee Lamb with the Jets or Deebo Samuel with the 49ers?
In a dynasty, I think I'd probably take Lamb still.
What about redraft?
Deebo. Because I think Lamb does have good long-term potential. I figure the Jets at some point will get rid of Adam Gase and they'll get back on track offensively where they're good. And Lamb could be a target hog even as soon as this year if he ends up with the Jets. It's possible because who else is going to – Crowder will get his. And after that, I don't know. I think that you could see CeeDee Lamb get close to – 105 targets with the Jets. What he does with them is a different story. I don't know if Deebo can get to 105 if he's the main target in San Fran.
Ben, if Jerry Jeudy goes to the Raiders, would you rather have Jerry Jeudy with the Raiders or DK Metcalf with the Seahawks? Same thing, dynasty and then redraft.
I'd probably have him close. I think I'd have Metcalf higher just because we've already seen Metcalf hit, and I feel pretty confident that he's going to be productive with Russell Wilson for the next several seasons. And we don't necessarily know for Judy. Judy has a couple of red flags. You know, I was talking about the team production metrics, and it's hard to control for teammates being really good. That's one of the things that those types of models will miss. And Judy played with Ruggs, and he played with Devonta Smith, who's still at Alabama. And he never really had a really high percentage of their team's receiving value, but he is a young prospect. He is an early declare. He has some of those things going for him. I still think very highly of him. I think you have to give him a little boost against his numbers, knowing that he was playing with some really good players. But I think there are just enough question marks that I'd rather have a guy that I've already seen do it in DK.
All right, same question, Heath. Henry Ruggs goes to the Eagles, and they trade up to get him, take him first. Would you rather have Ruggs or – it's probably too easy, but I'll say McLaurin.
I'm going to stick with McLaurin. Like, I, in my initial ranking of these two classes, I think I had Ruggs 10th. Actually, like, the one that would be difficult for me would be with Marquise Brown.
All right, so to that one, Marquise Brown or Ruggs?
If the Eagles traded up for him and took him as a first wide receiver, I'd probably move Ruggs ahead of Marquise Brown. Right now I've got Marquise Brown just a little bit ahead of Ruggs. There's some, obviously a lot of similarities there. I think Marquise Brown's going to be better than he was as a rookie, but if the Eagles put that type of investment in Ruggs, then he'd probably be ahead of Brown for me.
I'm so curious to see if there's going to be a team that surprises us. You know, you heard Steve Keim got asked a lot, the Cardinals general manager, about would they take a wide receiver at 8 because they were rumored to be looking at wide receiver before the Hopkins trade. And then he was still asked about it. Would they consider adding to their arsenal? I think it'd be dumb, just what they need at the offensive line. Some defensive issues as well. But, man, that'd be crazy if they were to take a receiver at 8. And then you have the Jaguars at 9. You know, that's certainly a position they could look at with 2 picks in the first round. Again, it would be a surprise, but everybody kind of thinks the draft run starts at 11 with the Jets, and that's where we're going to kind of see some teams. But, you know, if the Eagles do move up, maybe the Packers, you know, they fall in love with somebody, they move up. It's going to be really interesting to see who does make that move, maybe aggressively to target one of those wide receivers. We do hope it's Philadelphia. I think we're all consensus-wise thinking we hope it's CeeDee Lamb, but that'll be a fun look. As you talk about, I think you alluded to this, Ben, with Chenault, the slot guys. Jefferson, clearly is the best. He had 200 snaps in the slot for LSU last year. Chenault, who are some of the other slot guys that we're looking at? Ben, go ahead.
Like both Chenault and Jefferson are guys who played outside and in the slot. Jefferson played outside in that sophomore year that I referenced and then kicked into the slot. And I believe Chenault did the same. I think he played on the outside as a sophomore and kicked in.
He lined up everywhere.
Yeah, Chenault went everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think there's one of the things with this class is I think there's a lot of versatility, and it's one of the things I think we're seeing with the future of the NFL is just that wide receivers need to be able to play in multiple spots. Because
I'm glad you said it. I want to stop you right there, because I spoke to Devonta Adams last year at the Pro Bowl, and I was talking about Julian Edelman, so I was doing a story previewing the Super Bowl between the Patriots and who'd they play 2 years ago? The Rams. Patriots and the Rams, and about Edelman. And
it was forgettable Super Bowl.
It was. And I said to him, like, you know, is Edelman kind of considered the best slot guy? And he's like, I guess. He's like, but I play in the slot. Hopkins plays in the slot. You know, Julio will line up in the slot sometimes. You know, he was kind of, you know, looking at it. And then when I spoke to Chris Harris, the same thing. He's like, you know, everybody talks about me playing the best guys in the slot. It's because the best guys go in the slot. You know, it's not like I'm just lining up in the slot and playing those guys. And so I'm glad you brought that up, that, you know, we're going to see more and more teams move guys around. So
yeah, Michael Thomas is considered top receiver in the league, and he wouldn't have been considered a slot receiver coming out, but that's where he plays. I mean, that's what he does.
All right, so
Lamb and Judy play a bunch in the slot.
Right. The guys that I looked at, you know, just based on some of the snap counts and where they have lined up in college, mostly in 2019, Jefferson, KJ Hamler, Chenault, and Lynn Bowden from Kentucky, who I think
is who I was going to mention as well.
An underrated sleeper. Heath, of those four guys, which one stands out? I throw out Jefferson. Of Hamler, Chenault, and Bowden, which of those three guys stand out to you if they do get an opportunity to be slot receivers next year?
Yeah, I think Chenault would be the one. I agree with most of the things Ben said about him earlier, and I don't really love Hamler. I think Bowden's more interesting depending on where he goes, but Chenault would be the one.
I think Hamler's going to get a little bit of a bad rap until we see where he ends up, just because he didn't run at the combine. People think maybe he's hurt. You know, he did some things, you know, with the virtual pro days that teams seem to like. But he's another one of those guys. You know, he's fast, and we'll see if he could do some different things. All right, so I'm going to give you the second group of receivers that were drafted in that Dynasty Startup mock draft, and I want to get your favorite of this group. So we had after Michael Pittman in round 13, I'll run down the first 10 guys real quickly. So it was Lamb, Judy, Ruggs, Jefferson, Rager, Mims, Higgins, Chenault, Ayuk, and Pittman. Then the next group of guys. Here we go. Brian Edwards, Tyler Johnson, Chase Claypool, Van Jefferson, Antonio Gandy-Golden, KJ Hamler, Devin DuVernay, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Lynn Bowden, and Isaiah Hodgins? I think it's Hodgins. And I'm sorry if I mispronounce any of those names. I'll give you them again. Edwards, Johnson, Claypool, Van Jefferson, Gandy-Golden, Hamler, DuVernay, Peoples-Jones, Bowden, and Hodgins. Who's your favorite of that group, Dave?
I think my favorite is Claypool, but it's more so as a prospect than anything else, because there are a handful of big guys in this draft class, but he's a giant. He's over 6'4". He's 229. He runs a great 40. He has huge hands. All reports say he's got high character. He's definitely raw. He's definitely not a great route runner, but it's that size that makes him unique. And it's a close call for me between him and Bryan Edwards, because I really like Edwards a lot too.
Heath, how about you?
I'll go with Bryan Edwards. And again, another one of the guys, kind of like what Ben talked about, that maybe wasn't on a team that threw the ball a ton, but when you look at his dominator score, he absolutely dominated targets at South Carolina and was good pretty much from the very get-go in his college career. So I'll say Edwards.
Ben?
Yeah, I'll go to the last guy you named, Isaiah Hodgins from Oregon State. He's 6'4", not the greatest athlete, but productive. Again, in terms of team volume, was productive early, is an early declare. He's kind of one of my favorite underrated sleepers in the class. And, you know, one of the biggest things on top of all of these other metrics is just draft position, draft capital, whether teams are willing to invest a high pick on the guy, because they're the teams that then decide whether these guys actually get a real chance and play. So Hodgins is a guy, you know, he goes in the fifth or sixth round. I'm going to probably have to just give up on that love. But if someone's willing to take him in the third, you know, he starts to look a little bit like Kenny Golladay, who was a similar like fifth or sixth projection, who the Lions jumped all the way to the third and surprised some people. And then it's like, ooh, because this guy's numbers are good. Now that somebody gave him a third round pick, I really like this guy.
Yeah, I'm excited about Antonio Gandy-Golden. I took him in that draft. I took him in our rookie draft as well. I'm looking forward to see what the receiver from Liberty does. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what team gives him a shot. I think we can see him maybe go in the third round. You're hearing some buzz about him, so he's somebody I'm really excited about, but we're going to find out a lot more about these guys once we get, obviously, to next week and the NFL draft. We'll have a full breakdown of the NFL draft. I think we're going to do it for the first time ever right after the first round on Thursday. We'll have our podcast, obviously, get you ready Thursday and Friday for what's happened in the draft and what will happen for the rest of the week, and I think maybe Friday night as well. Some news and notes around the NFL. The Buccaneers are looking to trade O.J. Howard. That's a report.
We've heard that before.
To fruition. Well, we heard it during the season last year. Bruce Arians, not the most fond coach of his tight end. Give me a one-word answer. Best landing spot for O.J. Howard. Heath.
Indianapolis.
Dave.
Green Bay. Sorry, that was two words.
Ben.
Patriots.
Even without a quarterback right now?
Yeah, I think so. I trust Belichick's ability to scheme talent.
Dalton's been good throwing to his tight ends before.
Yeah, they can afford Dalton. I traded Dalton. We've been doing these mock draft Mondays on CBS Sports HQ, and I traded a third round pick for the Patriots for Andy Dalton, and then I got yelled at post draft by Pete Prisco saying they don't have the cap room right now to trade for Andy Dalton. I was like, Pete, it's a fake mock. I
wasn't you could cap. Always find the cap yeah. space.
I'm with Dave. I'd like to see Green Bay maybe make a move to get O.J. Howard. Joe Mixon is prepared for a holdout if he and the Bengals can't agree to a long-term deal. Heath, you're already guy on Joe Mixon. Would this make you even more concerned about drafting him if we're drafting right now?
Yeah, because they've already got Gio Bernard, so they can afford to just let him hold out. Yeah, no, I think absolutely. I was under the impression, and I don't know how I got this impression, maybe you guys can correct me, that the new CBA makes holdouts much more painful for players and much less likely to drag into the season. So
we've never seen a running back shy away from making things painful for a holdout.
Right. So yeah, I mean, if he makes that type of decision, it would be worrisome.
I think you're right, Heath. I don't know exactly what the new rule is.
Yeah, it does make it. I'm with you, too. I don't know exactly what the penalty is, but it makes it worse.
That's a homework assignment for me.
Anybody downgrading Joe Mixon yet?
Me. I've been taking him in a lot of our mocks. I think if he's playing, he's a little bit underrated. I mean, he hasn't been very good on the touchdown front, but back-to-back 1,400 total yard seasons is, you know, really impressive in a bad offense. And if his offense gets better, he could be really good if he's playing.
Isn't he like a borderline trap back?
He is a little bit, but he has enough receiving production, I think, that I don't know. I see some upside there in a different offense with a different quarterback. You know, Zach Taylor's offense wasn't really great last year, and we saw a lot of Ryan Finley on top of Dalton struggling. But I think, you know, new offense, Joe Burrow in there, things could dramatically improve for Mixon in terms of his touch splits and his touchdown potential. But obviously this holdout talk now, I'm going to be moving him back again.
Well, I think you wait to see what happens. You know, I mean, if you know, we get the training camp and he's a holdout, then it's a totally different conversation. You know what I mean? I'm still drafting him in the same spot I would be right now. You know, if
yeah, I've been taking him like early second, so right. I can't take him there now.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, we'll see what they do with their draft overall, but they're really getting two first round picks for the first time. They're going to get the quarterback and they're going to get Jonah Williams, who they didn't have, you know, and that's going to be a big piece of this offensive line. They're getting, you know, not a Hall of Fame wide receiver, but a guy who is in that two tiers down. You know, AJ Green back is certainly going to help having him back on the field. So yeah, this offense should get a boost. And a flip of the podcast you guys did earlier this week, second half performers. Joe Mixon's second half was a lot better than his first half. He really picked things up in the second half, maybe taking hold of that Zach Taylor offense. The greatest general manager ever in the NFL, Bill O'Brien, says that David Johnson is a three down back. I wish we had Chris Towers on this podcast because he takes David Johnson in every single one of our mock drafts. I don't think it's a surprise to hear David Johnson's three down back. Adam Azer talks all the time about how the Texans don't throw to their running backs to the level that we would like. Does this excite you anymore about David Johnson?
I thought that they just left two letters out. I thought he said he was a third down back because he hasn't been very good running the ball for like 3 years. Listen, my concern about David Johnson is that they already have Duke Johnson there, who's really good at pass catching. And if David Johnson didn't have pass catching, he wasn't going to be a top 25 running back. Now it makes me a little more interested in him in PPR, but it kind of sucks for Duke Johnson.
I'm getting less interested in David Johnson. I wrote about him this week. Texans running backs have averaged 54 catches per season with Deshaun Watson under center. Heath mentioned it. Duke is still there. I went back and watched David Johnson. He is slow to gather himself when he stops his momentum running the ball. So when the offensive line makes a lane for him, he can hit that lane solidly. I don't think he's necessarily a burner anymore. But if he's got to stop, he is a big, fat target. And not really fat. He's a big, strong target. But it's a big target that defenders can hit and knock down. And it's a big reason why his rushing average has been what it's been.
It's going to be really interesting to see what they do, how they use him, and how this receiving core, you know, sort of factors in as well now that they have Brandon Cooks and maybe in the market to move on from Kenny Stills. O'Brien also said during his meeting with the media that Will Fuller is doing great from his core muscle surgery. Ben, you took Fuller in that Dynasty startup draft. You like Will Fuller still, I think, with the Brandon Cooks trade. I mean, another health question once again.
Yeah, yeah. I think Heath could tell you just by never actually talking about Will Fuller, but comparing him to other underrated players that Fuller is not as good as I like him, because he'll compare him to Kenny Stills and Brandon Cooks, who are, you know, sneaky productive. But Fuller is good. That's just the bottom line. He had the best single game fantasy total of any player in a game last year, which isn't the only positive note on his profile, but he's been productive since he came in. He's got to stay healthy. That's the whole story.
Oof.
Got to stay healthy.
I think he has two games over 70 yards in like his last 16.
But he gets those chances every week. You just have to hope he cashes in on those deep ball chances. That's the whole, until we see his target volume consistently stay up, that you've got to look at him as a big play receiver who's going to be better for best ball than for anything else.
Matt Rhule also says he wants to avoid having Christian McCaffrey on the field for every snap. I'll believe it when I see it. And Matt Breida has signed his one-year tender offer, meaning he's going to be with the 49ers, barring trade. Yay, four running backs for the 49ers going into 2020. All right, let's talk a little best ball. So, Heath, tell us what best ball is. Tell the people what best ball is for those of us who do not play in best ball. I'm not saying me, but for the people who do not play in best ball leagues.
There are different, like, best ball is generally something right around a 20-round draft where you draft your team and forget it. I believe it's been called Draft Masters in some places in the past. But basically, you're going to draft two or three quarterbacks, probably 5 to 6 running backs, 5 to 6 receivers, 2 or 3 tight ends, sometimes defenses, but really shouldn't be, and never kickers, hashtag never kickers. And then you don't have to set your lineup. You don't make any adds or drops for the entire year, and there's no head-to-head matchups. But after week 16, the team that has scored the most points, and points are basically determined by The guys each week that score the most points are your starters for that week at each position. Most of them are one quarterback leagues with two running backs, three receivers, a tight end, and a flex. Maybe you have two flexes. I really, really enjoy it. And it's like if you get frustrated by, oh, I'm always the highest scoring team that doesn't make the playoffs, you don't have to worry about that here. The whole point is just scoring points.
What is your strategy for best ball, Ben?
Yeah, I think you, like Heath just described it, you don't have to make lineup decisions. So consistency not only becomes overrated, it becomes kind of something I look to actively fade because you have the depth. You're looking for peak weeks. You're looking for the Will Fuller types. That receiver, I want downfield receivers that can have big plays and big weeks, spike weeks, because every time they do, they're going to be in my lineup, and every time they don't, I'll likely have someone else who's producing. John Ross is another one we've talked about, is a great best ball guy this year in later rounds. It's a format where you definitely want to win at quarterback too, because one of the best things about the top quarterbacks is their consistency, but later quarterbacks can have spike weeks where they throw four or five touchdowns. And if you have three and you don't have to choose which one you're starting, it's really easy to get similar production, not easy, but similar production to some of the higher end quarterbacks, by taking the top week out of each of those three over the course of a season. So you want to think about that. You want to think about the positions that have spike week potential and build a group on your roster that gives you that upside every week without having to pay for it. In best ball, I'm more likely to take the stud running backs early and then be deep at receiver and wait for quarterbacks and also kind of wait on tight ends and get multiple options there.
I was going to say, like, basically all of the things you heard from Ben last year during the season about his strategy in redraft, I would presume that his best ball strategy is just that on steroids. Because a lot of times when he's talking about how your floor doesn't matter and it's all about upside, I'm thinking, yeah, I agree with that in best ball. But in a little bit different in redraft. So, yeah, a lot of things he said throughout last year are exactly the way I feel about best ball.
So let's take a look at some of the average draft position for the rookies so far. And again, this will change in a week, but right now the best ball ADP, Jonathan Taylor is going first in the fourth round, 47th overall. DeAndre Swift in the seventh round, 79th overall. J.K. Dobbins, ninth round, 100th overall. Cam Akers, 10th round. Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the 10th round as well. Akers is at 117 and Edwards-Helaire is at 119. Dave, are you surprised right now, given the fact that we don't know which of these teams are going to take any of these running backs, and Dobbins could be in a better spot than Taylor, Akers could be in the best spot, or Edwards-Helaire could be in the best spot? Are you surprised that there's a 3-round gap between Taylor and Swift and a 5-round gap between Taylor and Dobbins?
I'm stunned Taylor's going as a top 50 pick, because there's a chance he's not even a first-round pick. Are we sure he's going to end up in a spot where he's going to be a feature back, a potential three-down guy?
He can still be that in the second round. I mean, that's not out of their own possibility.
I know, but usually, I guess to a degree you're right that if he was going to be a consensus top 10 pick in the NFL draft, he'd go a lot sooner than round four here. So I'm just a little bit surprised by it. Maybe it's just more about seeing Dobbins in round 9, Edwards-Helaire in round 10. I think those are fantastic values. You're not going to find those guys there. I don't care what teams they go on. You're not going to find them there in best balls after the NFL draft. They're going to go at least one round higher. I wouldn't be surprised if Taylor goes one round later if he ends up in a bad situation.
My thought process with basically every rookie on here, I was kind of shocked, and that's kind of why I wasn't planning on writing about the rookie ADP. But my thing is, I think everybody amongst these rookies has the upside to be drafted a lot higher than their downside from where they're being drafted. Dave's right. Jonathan Taylor could land in a terrible spot and go one round later. He could also go to the Buccaneers or the Chiefs and be a second round pick, maybe a first round pick. So I think every single rookie that we talk about here, except for maybe Jalen Reagor, I think could go a lot higher and isn't likely to go much lower than this after the draft.
Do you think, separate conversation from best ball, but do you really think the Chiefs are going to take a running back in the first round?
I don't really.
Well, and the DeAndre Washington signing makes it, I think, less likely. I was hopeful.
That's the thing. It's like I keep seeing a running back, like, you know, Swift mocked to the Chiefs in the first round. It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it I wouldn't mock it that way, but I have seen it a lot.
The only way it makes sense is if Washington is there as a safety blanket in case they don't get their guy.
But they have Darrell Williams and they have Darwin Thompson returning. So they now have four running backs with at least some NFL experience. Darwin Thompson's is limited, but Darrell Williams played well last year before he got hurt. It's a deep group already.
I kind of thought the Washington thing made me think they don't think very much of Darwin Thompson. And they played Darrell Williams over him last year. He was not very productive the few times he touched the ball, and then they go sign DeAndre Washington. Like, he was a sixth-round pick. He might barely even be on a roster by this time. He might not be on a roster this time next year.
But we could almost say the same thing about every running back on the Chiefs roster right now. A year or 2 years from now, they might all be gone.
Right. Williams is a free agent after the season. Damian Williams is a free agent after this season. Right. He's also 28, so... I just think like they don't feel I could see them taking a running back at some point, but round one just seems like a huge leap.
I don't expect that to happen, no.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, and I don't know, I don't want to speculate too much, but when people are doing mocks, you're like DeAndre Swift feels like a back end of the first round guy, and where does he make the most sense? And you kind of work backwards as opposed to thinking about the team's motivations, and I think everything we're saying is true as well. So if you look at the Chiefs, they don't look like a team that's going to do that. We just don't know who is.
Right. Does anybody think there's a surefire first-round running back in this draft class?
No. No, I would echo everything you said, actually, at the top there. I've been taking Jonathan Taylor in a lot of our mocks. I think he's a phenomenal prospect, but a lot of the buzz is making it sound like he might be the third running back off the board. And at that point, I'll be wrong on all these mocks.
Right. I think the concern is the workload. You know, people look at the workload that he had at Wisconsin and, you know, also the fumbles and a couple of the drop situations. You know, there are some things that make you a little bit concerned. I did speak to, biasly, a Wisconsin running back, Dario Gumbawale. I think we'll air that interview at some point on our podcast. And I asked him, you know, I said, put on your analyst hat and tell me about Taylor. And he's like, he's going to be the next great running back in the NFL. So take that for what it's worth, you know, a Wisconsin guy talking about a Wisconsin guy. But
I don't have to listen to a Gumbawale say it. I can listen to Heath Cummings say it.
True.
Heath's a huge Jonathan Taylor fan, which makes me look closely at Taylor, to be honest with you.
Oh, I agree with Heath. I love Taylor. It sounds like Ben does as well.
Right. My favorite one of this group, but I don't know if he's a first-round talent.
I think he's better than Josh Jacobs, who was like a top 10 pick last year, right?
I think he was a little later, but yeah, I agree. He's better than Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, we'll see again which team looks at him. The rookie wide receiver, average draft position in best ball. Jerry Jeudy's going in round 11 at 132 overall. C.D. Lamb, 12th round, 138. Henry Ruggs, the third, 15th round at 169. Yeah. Jalen Reagor, 16th round, 192. Justin Jefferson in the 17th round, 193. So he sort of alludes to this. Reagor is probably the odd man out of these four guys. Heath, tell us about the values here for these guys.
Well, I think like people that don't play best ball might be hearing this and saying, why are these receivers so low? Well, by pick 150, most people in these drafts have taken at least two quarterbacks and maybe three and at least two tight ends. So these types of players get pushed down just a little bit. But I would expect, even with bad landing spots in San Francisco or with the Jets or whatever, I would expect Jeudy and Lamb are easily going to go in the seventh, eighth, ninth, maybe ninth round of these types of drafts. So I think there is definitely an opportunity over the last week before the draft happens here to get those guys cheap if you want to have some best ball exposure. I expect there – and Jefferson could – if he goes to the Eagles, his value could absolutely skyrocket.
Yeah, this makes me want to go sign up for about 20 best ball drafts before the NFL draft because I think all these guys are going to go up at least one, if not four rounds. Not in the case of Jeudy and Lamb, but I don't mind Reagor. I like him a lot. And I think if his landing spot is good, he could be impactful as a rookie. But Jefferson, if it's a PPR best ball, I almost don't care where he lands as long as he gets that playing time. He's got a chance to make an impact right away.
And I just want to echo what you guys are saying about their values going up. There's been a lot of research done on this. It's true every year. Best ball has been a very popular thing for the last five or six years. Rookie ADPs as a whole rise substantially after the NFL draft. There's just – people don't do well with uncertainty. They don't know where these guys are going to play. But then anyone who has even a marginally good landing spot, once we have more information about where they're playing, they start going higher. And the, really the only guys that, that don't go higher is where the ones that land in really horrible spots. AJ Brown's an example last year. Once he landed in Tennessee, everyone said, oh, they don't throw enough. And he actually started falling post-draft. But the majority of guys rise. And as a group, they rise. So Dave's right. If you want to draft some rookies, now's the time to do it.
Yep. You got a week. Go get it.
Ben, please post a picture of your mustache. Ben is rocking the best mustache ever right now. It is just, it's like, I'm not going to use the description I should use, but it's like police officer sitting at a donut shop mustache. Like, just perfect.
Grown-up man's mustache.
Grown-up man's mustache. How long have you been growing that thing?
I mean, I just did shave for the first, like, couple weeks of quarantine, and then I just, you know, shaved everything else and left the stash. So it's been over a month now, probably. It's
fantastic.
Yes.
Thank you.
Heath has rocked a very good mustache before. I've failed miserably. Dave's got a good, like, Sergeant Slaughter mustache when he had to do it once upon a time when he lost a bet. I think if we had a mustache contest, it would be a runaway between Ben and Heath, and then we'd have to just let the audience decide. I don't think Adam can grow a good mustache. So
he can draw one though. He can draw one very nicely on his face.
He can probably draw one. Well, this is fun, guys. Hope everybody has a good weekend. We'll be back on Monday with another Mock Draft Monday. I'm not sure which draft we will review. Probably the Dynasty Startup. Whenever Adam is not in a mock draft, you never know which direction he's going to go and choosing which mock we're going to review. But we'll probably just let Ben Tracker decide that and make it easy for all of us. So thank you guys for a great show. Thanks everybody for listening, and gotta go. Bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.